appropriately, the recent completion of the new Science, Industry, and Business Library clearly points to the future of library science. Although its historic facade more closely resembles the neoclassical style of its elder sibling with the lions up the street, the interior is pure, classic, modern, furnished with 21st century technology. The $100 million project, occupying about 160,000 feet of the former R. Altman department, B. Altman, I remember that it was B. Altman, department store, is the New York Public Library's largest undertaking since the main branch was completed in 1911. It will officially open to the public tomorrow. And joining me now are the president of the New York Public Library, Paul LeClaire, and one of the designers of this new branch, the celebrated architect Charles Guathmey of Guathmey Siegel and Associates. I'm very pleased to welcome them both to New York and Company today. Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
So when the doors open tomorrow and we enter, are we going to see something the likes of which we've never seen before or could not have seen before?
Yes. The doors open at 11, and those who come to us tomorrow and in the days after, and parenthetically, we expect 1 million people to come to this library in its first year. They will see a library the likes of which has never been seen.
Nowhere, no other city, no other place.
I certainly have never seen one like this. It's a spectacular piece of architecture, thanks to Mr. Guathmey and his partners. And we have a spectacular program to go into it so that the program is worthy of the architecture and the architecture is worthy of the program.
Now, in this case, Mr. Guathmey, you are working within a wonderful shell, a wonderful building. You're using that as a shell?
I think what's critical about the city is that they can save the great buildings. And B. Altman's is a building of presence, it's a building of integrity, and it has a very dense facade, as you said. Mm-hmm. So within that framework of a basic loft building, which is what department stores really are, there's a huge amount of flexibility that allows for the kind of intervention that we designed for the library.
You put five floors where three floors had been.
We put five floors of stacks, which hold over 200,000 volumes.
I mean, there are still books in a modern library?
Sure. Well, the idea that we all had, and Tim Healy, the former president, was insistent that we include a circulation library within this research branch because the technology was so advanced and maybe somewhat off-putting. So by having the circulation library visible from the street, seeing real books, seeing people in a reading room, connotes a familiarity that we felt was important.
Does this present problems that are very different from having just a hole in the ground and starting from scratch?
It's a different kind of problem. I think what is really easier about it is that the constraints of the existing condition determine the configuration and the forms that you're able to design. If you started from scratch, there's a different obligation. And obviously starting from scratch in New York City and Manhattan would be, I think, prohibitive.
We also have a landmark building here, but one with a very strong sense of identity and not one that one immediately thinks of as being a place where you would want to talk about science and technology. It's kind of old-fashioned in a wonderful way. Usually we would associate a building of this sort with the most modern and sleekest of exteriors.
Yeah, but I think that's the very important counterpoint, that the legacy and the historical references of a traditional, thick, urban building in New York gives the presence and the density to it and to potentially its program. Mm-hmm. And libraries have always been a sort of ideal public building type that establish what is important in our culture. And then to have the counterpoint or the intervention of a totally new technology within the old frame is an enrichment and adds to the whole awareness of both architecture and the new program.
Mm. There's also another element that I think is important here, and that is one that is a little less physical and concrete than putting a modern, sleek, beautiful, high-tech library inside of an historic building such as this that Charles just spoke so well to. It's more abstract, and that is that the B. Altman department store for generations and generations of New Yorkers represented a very special attitude towards service. And what the library has done very deliberately in terms of retraining and reorienting its staff to work in this facility is to have really taken a big step in insisting on customer satisfaction.
But you're not going to have elevator operators who say fifth floor, hosiery,
no,
technology.
Quite correctly, we will not. But we do have the B. Altman book delivery desk, so that when things come down from the stacks, you will pick them up at the B. Altman delivery desk.
Ah.
And thanks to a wonderful gift from the B. Altman Foundation, we've kept the name of the store alive within the library.
And we're also using the old pneumatic system of delivery of the requested book to the stacks. So it's a recall of the way that before computers, the way they used to send bills up to accounting. And
yeah,
there's
used to be
back.
Little tubes, right?
Little tubes that shoot,
but they
shoot
can be expanded.
Well, we put in a new pneumatic tube system. But you fill out your call slip, you give it to the person behind the desk, and it goes upstairs to one of the five layers of stacks in a pneumatic tube in a little cell. And then the books come down in a dumbwaiter, and we hope within 10 minutes people will have their books in their hands.
Well, it's like a merging of old technology and modern technology, which should delight people.
That's right, we hope so.
You also want to amuse them, not just have them come in and sit there with a glower on their face as they do their research.
Well, one of the new responsibilities that we have in building a high-tech, information-rich environment such as this is to train people on using new technology.
Mm-hmm.
The awesome thing about Sybil, as we call it, is that there are 500 seats for 500 people. Every single one of them has a connection, one way or the other, with the world of electronically formatted and stored information.
Sybil is the computer system?
No, Sybil stands for Science Industry Business Library. That's the acronym.
Mm-hmm.
But of 500 desks, we'll have 250 workstations. That is 250 high-end computers. Now, we know that there'll be some members of the public who don't know how to navigate their ways through the world of electronically formatted information. So we've built, Charlie's built, four training rooms for us where over the course of the day we will offer for free training sessions by our librarians for the public as to how to navigate their way through the rich resources that we have in terms of computing technology there.
People will actually learn how to use computers as they go, or at least these computers.
People will
when they come to the library.
People will learn how to use these computers to retrieve the information that they contain that's in electronically formatted databases.
In designing this, you have to also be aware that things are going to change. Computers have changed so much in the last 10 years. I assume that this library is going to change as the technology changes over the next century.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a lot of flexibility as well.
There's no question.
You really have to make this technician,
no, absolutely,
engineer friendly.
I think the flexibility comes in the infrastructure, where all of the cabling, all the conduits that are unfilled at the moment will be able to take any form of delivery to the workstation. And as Paul said, every workstation has an accessible plug, which over time can be adapted to deal with any type of delivery service.
You also had to put a lot of telephone lines in here because people won't have to go to this library, as beautiful as it is. If they have a modem on their computer, they can just ring up the library?
Well, they can access certain portions of the collections, specifically.
Obviously not the books.
Not the books, and not commercial databases.
Mm-hmm.
They can access the electronic catalog of the whole library, Sybil itself, as well as the entire library system. And over time, we hope that we can mount for public access from off-site some government databases and also European community databases, and we're in the process of negotiating those. from the vantage point of it being a smart building, one of the things that, that Gwathmey Siegel did was to insist that all the floors be raised floors with the cabling running underneath, so we can just pop up units mm-hmm. of the flooring and pull cable and install new kinds of cable. They've also designed the desks in such a way that all the wiring drops very, very easily and conveniently down behind, so that if you change the computers that are out, you don't have to start ripping up the desks and change the furniture and so on and so forth. We've also, if I might add, paid a lot of attention to the creature comforts of the public in terms of the quality of the seating that's provided, the kind of lighting that's there. And this is going to be not only the most beautiful and most highly used business library in the world, it's going to be the most comfortable library to sit in and use as well.
That was always one of the joys of going to the main branch on uh-huh. Fifth Avenue, that even if you just want to read the day's newspaper, you were reading it in real style.
Right, right.
My guests on New York & Company are Paul LeClaire, president of the New York Public Library, and Charles Gwathmey of Gwathmey Siegel and Associates. We're talking about the new Science, Industry, and Business Library in the old B. Altman building, being called Sybil. You're listening to New York & Company on AM 820 WNYC, New York Public Radio. There, you're not the only tenant in this building, right?
No, library? We're not. Over us is Oxford University Press, non-profit press associated with Oxford University in England. And then occupying the rest of the building, and Gwathmey Siegel are the architects for that job as well, will be the CUNY Graduate School that will move from its present site at 42nd Street.
So this is envisioned as some kind of academic center?
The entire super block will be given over entirely to information, to nonprofit publishing, and to higher education at the doctoral level. It's one of the most extraordinary conversions of a building for a wonderful purpose that I know about in New York.
This is a lot of smart people in one square block.
This is a landmark, right? It's been designated as a landmark?
The exterior has been designated as a landmark.
I wonder about when architects are brought in to work on things like this. I know there was a lot of controversy when you were asked to design an annex to the Guggenheim. Maybe I just heard rumors.
There was definitely.
And then you weren't involved in the Whitney redo, but there was a lot of screaming about the various Michael Graves versions of that. And I've always been curious about when architects are asked to work on somebody else's work, it has to be very a conflicting experience, because I'm sure that if you did a building that you were very proud of and then discovered that 25 years later somebody was being brought in to add an annex to it or to change some aspects of it, you might be upset.
I think there are two issues. I think one is that architecture is a continuum, that if the creative spirit that drives architects was about imitation or was about redoing what's been done, then we would never have the enrichment of that discipline and its ability to add to the culture. So in adding to the Guggenheim, what was important to us was to both be reverent to a masterpiece, but to also understand its formal implications and its opportunities on its own terms to be enriched. And I think you take a situation like that and you must understand your obligation, and also that you have an inherent respect for the original architect and the building, and the thing you add to it must reinforce it, extend it, and enrich it. And in that way, I think the original Guggenheim was made better and by our addition. And I think in that sense, the intervention of the Sybil program into the Altman building is a wonderful counterpoint. You go through really what is a 5-foot-thick limestone facade that has windows on the street that are 20 feet high, and you experience a public space, which I think is unique to New York, that in fact gives you a wonderful sense of anticipation about what the opportunities are in that building. And I always think that counterpoint is much more interesting than imitation. And I also think that you have to invent because we already know what's been done.
Well, you've gotten quite a bit of praise. Paul Goldberg of the New York Times called this an elegant and eloquent testament to the synthesis of the old and new, the house of 21st century technology set within early 20th century limestone palace. So in this case, at least, it doesn't get better than that. Well, could you imagine doing something to the main branch, the famous Fifth Avenue 42nd Street branch? Could that be gutted and redone, or is the interior so important in itself that the library system just has to live with its inefficiencies, Mr. LeClaire?
Well, I've never really thought of 42nd Street as an inefficient library. To be honest, it is a it is another of New York's masterpieces. It was designed inside and out to be a library, generally considered one of the greatest libraries in the world. And we have done, and we will do, increasingly over the course of the next 5 years, very sensitive restorations and modernization. Yes, we do. I received a wonderful gift of $15 million to redo the main reading room there, and we will be bringing technology into that space. But with great reverence for the Carrere and Hastings environment that has served the needs of readers there for 85 years now.
You couldn't bring in a 75-foot stainless steel staircase as you have in the Altman building.
No, but I think Paul's correct. The difference is that building was designed as a library, and the intensity of the public space and the rendering of this public space was about the use of that building as a library. Altman's, on the other hand, was a loft building. Mm-hmm. Department stores had to be flexible for the rearrangement of their floors and how they displayed their goods. So a loft building, by nature, offers the opportunity of being unspecific, except for structure, that allows for a much more dynamic intervention.
This is not your first library. You did the Library and Science Building in Westover, the Westover School in Middlebury, Connecticut. A very different kind of project?
Yeah, very different. I mean, this was a very interesting context problem where the original building was a cloister sort of courtyard building, and in 1960 they built a building adjacent to it which was called the Student Center, and which was totally antithetical to the master plan of the campus, and our building became a link between the old and the new, and in fact made the bridge between those two pieces of architecture and redefined the space. But the library itself was a prep school library without the technology that we did in Sybil.
The reason I ask is because some architects specialize. Some design hospitals. Others design factories. Others design schools. Some seem to design everything. Sports complexes, film complexes, libraries. Does that mean that you have to bring in other experts when you try to be that diverse? Or is it all, when you finally come down to it, is all pretty much the same thing?
I don't think it's the same thing, but I think there is a certain amount of research that one has to do to become involved in any project, whether you've done it before or not. There's context issues, there's new program, there's new technology, there's a different place that you have to address, and there obviously are consultants. In our case at Sybil, we had the great fortune to have Bill Walker, who was at the time the head of this research library, who was the most informed and the most risk-taking and the most provocative client that an architect could have. Not only did he know the information, he was excited about the possibilities. He had a huge vision about what could be, and he was our consultant. And it made for not only an appropriate design, but an accurate design.
Although sometimes architects do run into a situation where a project is fairly far along, somebody changes we have a new president or whatever who says, no, 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 I don't want it like this at all.
This president didn't do it.
You didn't do that.
No,
you were happy with what you were
well,
getting
this,
there.
This president has been a fan of Gwathmey Siegel for years and years and years. And when I came to the library 2.5 years ago, I was delighted that Charlie was doing this job for us.
Put on the headphones. We'll take a call. We did get a call from somebody who wanted to know whether this place will also be easy for use for somebody who has sight problems. Are there going to be Braille books, or are there other ways that people with bad sight can do their research?
There is Braille signage throughout the building, and I'll have to find out exactly the extent to which we will have Braille computers there.
This is a problem for libraries in general. There just isn't all that much stuff in Braille. There are special libraries for Braille.
There are readers that will that generate a synthetic voice that can read a text, and I know that we have them in a number of our branches. We do have a specialized library, the Andrew High School Library, for the blind and disabled. But it's a very good question. I'll have to get a better answer to it.
Beth from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
Beth, are you there?
Okay, phone, excuse me. But I had to call because I'm one of the students who will be moving in. I'm a CUNY grad student. And I want to, hello?
Yes,
we're here.
I want to point out the fact that, you know, when we get to the point where we do our dissertation, we really spend so much time there. Are they taking into account the fact that, you know, the library is not, for us, our part of the library is place that we spend a huge amount of time. I'm sure they're familiar with the old digs of the CUNY on 42nd Street.
Yeah.
The library's in the basement, and it's really appalling.
Well, here, what are you asking? Will they supply you with seat cushions?
No, but will they take the need for light and air? And
I think they've already said that they have taken all of that into consideration, and this will be the most comfortable, you said, library?
I think Beth
She's
is talking about the library
one.
That will be in the CUNY Graduate
the CUNY
School
graduate
on the other
school.
Side of the building.
Yeah, it has a little different use.
Yeah.
No, I think the responsibility and the awareness of students' use of libraries is an obligation that we have to make it both user-friendly, also productive, and also giving you an environment which is sympathetic to long stays and intense research and making your life as comfortable as it can be.
We thank you for your call. Of course, long stays may be a problem in another area. We keep on reading about library closings because of lack of funds. Is that not going to happen here?
Well, I have to say that the mayor and the city council have been very, very supportive of us. The mayor committed significant annual operating support for Sybil. Mm-hmm. The speaker of the city council contributed a substantial capital allocation for the construction of Sybil.
But you had to make a decision. Sometimes money that could have gone elsewhere to keep a local branch open wound up going here?
No, not at all. No. The library system is divided into two parts, the research libraries and the branch libraries. The research libraries are 42nd Street, the Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center, Sybil, the Schomburg Center in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
We run those with a combination of private and public support. Two-thirds of the operating budget comes from the private sector for those libraries. The branches, 83 branches in Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island, are run primarily with city support, as is the case with the Brooklyn and Queensboro libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And we've received sufficient funding from the city to keep all those libraries open 6 days a week.
Will there be any linkage between the Brooklyn Business Library and Sybil?
Through computer networks, yes, through the internet. But the funding is totally discrete and separate, so that we took nothing away from the branches to put into Sybil.
Is this also the model for future technological advances in other branches?
This is the prototype 21st century library. Mm-hmm. You can come into this library from all over the world, and you can get to all over the world from this library. If you bring your laptop, any place that you sit, you can plug in and get on the internet for free.
Oh, well, I have to buy a laptop and then I'll see.
No, you can sit in 250 of the places and get on and go out from there through our own computers.
I want to thank you very much for coming by and telling us about this, and it sounds very exciting. I'll be one of those million people, I'm sure, during this first year. Paul LeClaire is president of the New York Public Library. Charles Guathmey is the architect, one of the most famous architects in the world. He's with Guathmey Siegel and Associates, and we've been talking about the new science, industry, and business library. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.